Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Thanks for making us part of your day. Jazz back in action coming up later on tonight as they take on the Lakers one more time. All right, joining us now, Sean Devaney, one of the best when it comes to NBA writers, has been doing it for a long, long time. Sean, how you doing?
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Scott. Hey, Hans. How are you guys?
Very good.
Very good. Thanks for joining us on short notice. We really appreciate it. Let's talk a little bit about where your thoughts are and with the Jazz as they kind of get closer to the playoffs. You know, obviously, you want to make sure you're playing your best basketball, and Donovan Mitchell has the injury, and that's legitimate, but also the Jazz, I think, being careful with some other players. How hard is it for teams to kind of walk the line in making sure that they're still competitive and playing games well, but also making sure that they're healthy and going into the playoffs at their best as well?
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, you know, especially if you have players who haven't necessarily handled deep playoff runs before. You know, I think if you're a team that's got that level of experience, then maybe you worry about it a little bit less. But, you know, at this point, you know, managing these last couple of weeks here, this last month, and being able to, A, stay healthy in a situation where so many teams, so many players have been really hammered by injuries with this compressed schedule, you know, that's got to be the priority. But at the same time, you don't want to lose your momentum. Certainly if you're Utah, that's got to be a concern the way the last couple of weeks have gone, and maintaining playoff seeding. Now, I don't think playoff seeding matters quite as much this year, but it is still something where, you know, you want to play the weakest possible team, and you'd like to have whatever kind of home court advantage you can have, you know, have that through the playoffs. Of course, the Jazz have been fantastic at home all year, so they'd really like to keep that number one seed. But certainly you don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, put health at risk for anybody who's who obviously you're going to need.
As we watch health management, how often are teams managing a four-year vet or a five-year vet, kind of the younger-aged player in the NBA?
You know, not usually. You know, I think this year is different. You know, typically, you know, that sort of management doesn't happen until you get to, you know, guys who are in their early 30s. You know, so that's what we're used to seeing. You know, that's changed up quite a bit just in the last couple of years, things really starting with Kawhi Leonard. Now, we were seeing players get rested before Kawhi Leonard did the load management thing the way he did in Toronto 2 years ago. But at the same time, you know, he's a much younger guy. He did have that quad problem, but you know, still he was a younger guy, and so I think it has changed a little bit to where teams are going to be more willing to look at that with younger players. At the same time, you know, this I wouldn't read too much to anything that's happening this season, just because it is such a unique year in terms of the way the schedule's arranged.
Is there value in being the number one seed for the Jazz, and is that something they should achieve to acquire? I mean, should that be a goal of theirs to end the year?
You know, I think 26-3 is a pretty good sample size. You know,
yeah.
You know, even though it's not the same, you know, there's obviously a comfort level there, and teams don't like going there. So, you know, when you have that disparity, you know, you look at a lot of teams. The Lakers have been they've been better lately, but you know, even before the guys got hurt, even before James and Davis got hurt, they weren't particularly good at the Staples Center. You know, so that's a team who, you know, probably doesn't care. You look at Portland, has the same record on the road as they do at home. That's been a little more common this year, just without the fans and such. But no question that whatever it is, Utah has a big advantage at home, and they absolutely need to, you know, do what they need to do to, you know, again, you know, you balance it against, we've got to make sure these guys are rested. We've got to make sure that we're not putting anybody at risk. But I do think of any team in either conference, really, that Utah is a team that should really kind of keep its focus on that number one seed.
Sean, how vaccinated is the NBA right now, and how is that vaccination influencing how they're proceeding with protocol?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky because, you know, every state obviously has different rules and things like that. So, you know, you're dealing with some teams that that aren't very vaccinated, and some teams that are almost fully vaccinated, and you know, so there is a disparity there. I remember talking to you guys, I believe before the season started, we talked a little bit about asterisks. You know, that asterisks. We were talking about that last year in the bubble, but it's probably more so this year, just because there's just such a random factor in terms of this COVID stuff and the contact tracing and things like that. So you get a team like the Celtics, which has lost almost 140 games, you know, player games. The Celtics have lost to COVID protocols, and then you have the Indiana Pacers that have lost two. And so you have this wide disparity, and part of it now, I think we're going to see the same thing with the vaccine, that you're going to have, you know, some teams that are going to have pretty much everybody have it, and some teams that are going to be struggling to get everybody through.
Do you think that Brad Stevens gave Indiana a second thought? I mean, 7 years, $70 million. If that's true, I mean, you have to somewhat consider that, don't you?
I think you have to consider it, sure. You know, I mean, you know, you get to go back home, and you get to leave in the middle of what's been a pretty miserable season. I think there were obviously high hopes for the Celtics, having gotten to the conference finals last year, and then you know, to see the way things sort of unraveled this year. Now they've played a lot better lately, but you know, certainly at the time, you know, a month ago, this was a pretty miserable bunch to be around. So I would think that he would have had to have thought about it at least twice. But you know, I do think he didn't want to leave this job unfinished, and that it would have been a bad look for him to just up and bolt. And I also think I don't think he really wants to get back into recruiting and stuff like that. I think he wants to just focus on coaching, and that's what you get to do with the NBA.
Have people started to cool it on that Brad Stevens is a basketball savant, a basketball genius, or do they still have full belief that he's one of the best basketball minds in the NBA?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm here in Boston, and the transformation has been remarkable from a guy who you know, whose every out of timeout play was a work of art that should be you know, drawn up and hung in the Louvre, to a guy who, you know, now he just can't do anything right. He's a bum. He should be run out of town. It's pretty amazing that, you know, the reality is he is a terrific basketball mind. He really is. I think where he gets in trouble is that he doesn't relate well to NBA players, you know, and I think that's part of the issue. You know, I think he's gotten better at that, but I think that's something that did catch up with them a little bit. When they had Walter McCarty, who was a Celtic for a long time, beloved Celtic, on the bench, I think that really helped him a lot. You know, he was a pretty good, you know, voice in the locker room as a young coach who was a former player. They've got Evan Turner now. I don't know that he has the same voice as Walter McCarty had, but I think that's something that that really has hurt him in terms of you know, where he is in coaching. He's very good with the X's and O's, obviously. I think some of the player relations stuff is where he comes up short.
With you being in that Boston market, can you kind of take us to the other side of the Gordon Hayward saga? Obviously, it started here in Utah and ended up there in Boston for a bit. What was that Gordon Hayward time like in the Brad Stevens combo? And how did it eventually end up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was almost like, you know, a guy who was never really here. You know, I mean, obviously he gets hurt 5 minutes into his first game. His second season, he's coming back, but he's not the same. And it was clear that, you know, he's very afraid to attack the rim, very afraid to get to the to get into the paint, and you know, was still doing some good things, but just obviously wasn't himself. And then last year, you know, by then it was obvious that he was the fourth wheel. You know, that Kemba Walker was when he was healthy, was going to be you know, one of the top three options, and then obviously you've got Tatum and Brown. So, you know, by the time that he was finally healthy and ready to play for the Celtics, you know, he was a fourth option, and it was pretty clear that they didn't sign him to be that, and he didn't want to be that. So it was almost like, you know, looking at it, it was almost like 3 years where he was barely here.
Sean Devaney joining us, NBA editor for Heavy.com, also contributes to Forbes Sports. The Derek Chauvin thing, or the You know, whether guilty or not guilty will probably be sometime this week. How much of that is on the minds of NBA front office and individual NBA teams?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see how it what happens with it. But obviously, in the bubble, there was you know, part of them coming back and playing was having an increased voice on social justice issues, and you know, we'll see how it plays out. But look, if there's a bad outcome in terms of you know, guilty, not guilty, and you know, there's protests and stuff, then you know, you might have the same thing that you saw in the bubble, where players might take a day off and might say we're not playing tonight or something like that. You know, all those contingencies are certainly being considered by the league right now. You know, again, like it's hard to say what's going to happen and when, but you know, I know for a fact that certainly the GMs and team owners are considering what the possibilities will be. The only question is, you know, will the players' union sort of be on board if they can work on it together, whatever it is? Then, as we've seen, that goes much smoother than, you know, like what happened with the Bucks last year, if you remember, after a shooting in Wisconsin. You know, they sort of just decided on their own to boycott a game, and nobody was really ready for it. Some of the other players were ticked off by that. You know, whatever happens, they need to be coordinated. I think both sides know that.
Are the Denver Nuggets, even with the current probably leading MVP candidate for the NBA, are the Denver Nuggets just dead in the water without Jamal Murray?
Yeah, I mean, they just don't have that perimeter threat, and you need that in today's NBA. And certainly, I don't need to tell you guys what he did in the bubble last year, and you know how that sort of raised his reputation, and you know, if you're the Nuggets, you're looking forward to that again this year once you get to the playoffs. And yeah, you know, I mean, they can bring in some guys to sort of replace him, and they've got other good players. Michael Porter Jr. You know, is certainly going to get more of an opportunity. He's played really, really well. You know, Aaron Gordon having come over from Orlando, but it's just not the same. You know, you really need that reliable scorer, and they just don't have it now. So yeah, you know, it's really a shame because they were playing so well, but yeah, it's hard to see them going very deep.
Kind of a random thought. You see the player, the number one overall, you know, the people assume will be the number one overall pick, signed with Gonzaga. I want to get your thoughts on the first year of the G League super team, where instead of going to college, you could play on this G League team, get paid, get some NBA coaching. Do you anticipate that more players will look at that going forward?
Yeah, I do. You know, it's one of those things that it's a hard thing to measure whether it was successful this year or not, just because, you know, the G League thing was, you know, as much as this season might have asterisk, the G League season was just crazy, right? Because they were just playing all in a bubble, and a lot of teams didn't even go. But, you know, I mean, if you look at it, you know, Jalen Green, who was probably the biggest name to go in there, Jonathan Kuminga from New Jersey, you know, he also, you know, when you look at the guys who agreed to play for that team, you know, most of them, I think, help themselves. And as long as that's the case, then I think you're going to see more guys be willing to do that. Again, you know, it's a little tough because the situation was so weird just with the G League this year. But I think as they get a chance to roll it out a little more, I think more and more players are going to look at that as a real option.
Sean, I wanted to talk to you because the Utah Jazz obviously playing the Lakers tonight. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the fit with Andre Drummond. Drummond's done some really good things, and obviously against the Utah Jazz the other night was very dominant. How good of a fit is he? How much better does he make them?
You know, I was talking to Scott about this the other day, and you know, if you get the Drummond that you see sometimes, you know, if you get good Andre Drummond, then he's going to be a great fit because, you know, he's big. He doesn't necessarily play away from the basket, of course, but they don't, you know, they need to get about 25 to to about 25 minutes a game from him. That's all they really need. Look, down the stretch, they're going to have Anthony Davis at the five. That's just what they do. He doesn't like to be a center, but he is. You know, he doesn't like to say it, but he is. So, you know, they really just need 25 minutes out of Andre Drummond. And for a guy who rebounds the way he does, the way he can be a presence in the middle on both ends of the floor, that is a great fit. You know, that's a great 25 minutes from a guy like that. The problem is that, you know, if he goes back and he has the sort of mental lapses that he always has, where it's just, you know, not turning his head on in transition and just let somebody just walk right past him and score. You know, he does so many of those plays in the course of a game that, you know, it's really that's why no team really sticks with him. Now, if playing for the Lakers and having a chance to win a championship changes that and changes his focus and brings him to a different level, then it's going to be a fantastic fit. But if he's still making those mistakes, you know, look, JaVale McGee, you know, was the same way. He went to Golden State and then to the Lakers and really kind of had those stupid plays worked out of him just by being around veteran winning groups. If that happens with Andre Drummond, then he could be a really, really, you know, huge addition for them. It's just a matter of whether it's going to get between the ears with him or not.
Sean, always good to catch up with you, man. We appreciate it. Look forward to catching up with you again here soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Sean Devaney right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.